Hey everyone, and welcome back. And today we're talking about a bunch of Switch news and just kind of analyzing what's been going on with the Switch and what people are thinking about it and some upcoming games for it.
Yep, we cannot stop talking about the Switch right now. Switch fever runs high in our blood.
Oh yeah, seems like every day there's something new that we're hearing about it. So recently, a couple weeks ago when they had the big Switch announcement, there was some criticism over the lack of launch titles. Mm-hmm. And there's been a few more announced games that'll be coming out at launch. They are ports, but, you know, the more the merrier.
Yeah, initially the launch lineup was The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, of course, 1-2 Switch, and those are the only games from Nintendo. And then they had Skylanders Imaginators, I think is the name of it, Just Dance 2017, and Super Bomberman R. And those were kind of the what we understood to be the full launch window, I mean lineup. And I think along with that were a bunch of games slated for March. And I feel like several developers kind of wanted to make the launch day, didn't quite want to commit to that right away with the actual date. And I feel like a couple of them have been getting a little more confident in that date. So we have had a few more confirmations for March 3rd. So these include The Binding of Isaac Afterbirth Plus, kind of a juicy name there. Which is, I think it's by the Super Meat Boy team. It's a combination of a few versions of that game that I think combined kind of pretty, more or less add up to the actual MSRP retail price that they're charging for that, $39.99. In addition to that, there's I Am Setsuna from Square Enix. And this is an RPG, actually, a turn-based RPG that is launching with the system, which is kind of interesting. So if you want another big quest to go along with Zelda, it's getting, you know, some pretty decent reviews on Steam. In addition to that, the team behind World of Goo and Little Inferno and Human Resource Machine had just confirmed that all three of those are coming to the Switch as well in terms of, in terms of ports. I think they're all physical copies. I'm not 100% sure. But all three of those games will be making their way to the Switch on launch day as well. I haven't played all three of them. I did play World of Goo back in the Wii days, and it was a lot of fun. And I hear good things about the other two games as well.
I haven't played the others, but I did play World of Goo, and I agree, it's a lot of fun. If you haven't played it, it's probably a recommended pickup.
Was there anything else, Chris, for launch so far?
No, that's the full list that I see so far.
We got twice as many games now.
Yeah, which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be something for everyone, regardless of, I mean, obviously almost everybody's going to get Zelda, but for picking up a second game, I think pretty much all tastes can be accommodated. Like, I've heard mixed to slightly positive things about I Am Setsuna, which, you know, as a huge Chrono Trigger fan, I had some interest in, but when I looked into it more, it just seemed like Square Enix just can't get their act together.
Well,
that's,
I mean,
what I would say.
Making Chrono Trigger again is pretty difficult. You got to get Akira Toriyama together with, like, Nobuo Uematsu and that third person, whoever else was part of the Dream Team. You know, it's kind of a merging of Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy, and it kind of had all this talent from both series. So, I don't know, hard to strike lightning again.
Yeah, that's true.
There is a rumor that Snipperclips may be a launch title, which would be really exciting to me, because Snipperclips looks really good.
Yeah, and it's only $20. It's a downloadable game.
Yeah, it's so an eShop title, $20. Plus. That's right. But we don't know for sure yet on that one. It's still officially slated for March. So we'll have to kind of wait and see for that. Also, with recent news regarding the Switch, there's been more public sightings of it. It was most recently at PAX South, and which is kind of, you know, drives me a little crazy, because I've been to PAX South, and it's actually not too far from me. I was thinking about going again this year and maybe, you know, doing like Tadpole Trouble or something there again, but I ended up coming down with a bad case of the flu, which was, it kind of knocked me out of commission for about a week, and that was unpleasant, and it meant that I couldn't play the Switch, which was even more unpleasant. So, unfortunately, I don't have any hands-on impressions for you guys, but I have been kind of drinking up all the Switch information over the past several days and getting pretty hyped. So, I'm looking forward to launch.
What are you most hyped about?
Well, obviously it's Zelda, just because, you know, normally you get, like, you get your launch systems, and the launch games, for the most part, are usually, you know, they're fun, but they're not, like, what you buy the system for. And then later on down the line, you get Zelda, and Zelda's, you know, Zelda is something to get excited for. this time around, like with the Wii, you kind of have both kind of combined into one. So it's just a really exciting time to be a Nintendo gamer, at least if you're a Zelda fan, and who's not? So Breath of the Wild, I think I'm just going to be kind of shutting myself in my, you know, up in my house for a while, getting some beef jerky, some trail mix, a few pairs of underwear. It's going to be good, man. It's going to be going to
yep.
Yeah, this is a little bit of information for you guys. I'm really looking forward to Midnight launch. Right now, my current plan is only getting Zelda, but I'm going to kind of go a little crazy with Zelda. I'm getting the special edition, you know, the case and everything. I'm probably going to pick up an amiibo, you know, maybe the one of Zelda herself, just to get into the spirit. I'll probably pick up the player's guide as well, because, I mean, why not? It looks nice. I don't know. I like having the big physical book of stuff for games I like. I'm just hoping the game itself won't be like a huge letdown, because that would just kind of suck all the wind out of my sails.
If it is, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I'll have some strong words for Nintendo, because it'd be hard to mess this up at this point. Like, all the planets are aligning for this game for me right now. This is kind of like,
yeah.
Everything's coming together, you know? And yeah, there's really no excuse for dropping the ball at this point.
I agree, but I'm going to be a negative Nancy for a moment and say that I can see how the game could mess up.
What if you turn it on, you start playing, you're just like, this is boring. You know, like this big world, I don't really want to go look anywhere. I don't really want to fight stuff. Just like, meh. There's no music, meh. I don't know. I could see this happening, you know? It's not very likely. But the possibility is there, where it's just not entertaining whatsoever.
Yeah, if it feels that unfocused. One of the main concerns I have is the crafting system, because in similar games like Minecraft or other games that have like a big open world, and you collect a lot of little items and you can craft them, not that those are similar to Zelda, but they're in those aspects are similar to Breath of the Wild. And those games run a risk of it feeling kind of like a grind, like, okay, I have to go kill a bunch of these guys and get this certain thing so that I can craft this other thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm really hoping that the crafting and collecting elements of the game are, like, supplemental to the main part of the game, where, like, you do them, but only as you're doing something else.
Okay.
So it's not like, okay, I have to go to this field and cut down all these trees to gather all these pieces of special wood or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just tedious. And in a game like Zelda, I think that would be a big, big problem. Yep. So we haven't seen a lot of the collecting, crafting gameplay, aside from what was shown originally, but that is my main concern. As long as the game world is interesting and exciting, like, it's not just a big, boring, empty place, and the crafting is cleverly done and tucked into the gameplay rather than a main focus and therefore, like, a grind, as long as they avoid those problems, I think it's, you know, going to be quite great, but I'm a little worried about those, because we haven't really seen something like that from Nintendo before, and
you know, I kind of like crafting stuff.
I like
collecting pieces of upgrades, and then and it's like, oh, I only need one more dragon dung to make the fancy sword, you know? And then you go kill a few dragons, and it drops the dung, and it's like, oh yeah, sweet, now I can go fight my sword. I mean, not fight it. I can make my sword and make it, you know, and feel the power flow through me. I don't know. They have done it in Zelda before. They've done it in Skyward Sword, and they did it in Triforce Heroes.
Okay.
It was a little bit more in the background there, because you pretty much get one reward for beating every stage, and eventually you have enough stuff to make new outfits and things, and you can also buy them in the shop and everything with your rupees. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I think when done right, it gives you that kind of macro level of progression where you're sort of slowly working towards several goals at once. If it's not done like in a super grindy way, it can kind of, you know, it expands the breadth of the game for me. The breadth of the wild, if you will.
For me, it depends how it's done. You remember Rune Factory Frontier, what game you liked more than I did.
Oh yeah, Rune Factory was sweet!
I liked some parts of it. It was like a new Harvest Moon game in a lot of positive ways, but
yep.
I think you agreed though that the spirit balance or whatever that thing was.
The runies. Yeah, they were a headache. They were a headache. They were a problem.
But that aside, all the grinding in that game, like, everything could be skilled up, like, 100 times or something.
I loved it. Oh, man, I was so hooked on that. I'd be, like, making my cooking better, making my my shoelace tying better. Everything got a little meter. I had to get those meters up.
That's such an artificial method of extending the life of a game. Like, you can take a very bland and boring game and put in a system like that stretch it out to like 100, 200 hours or something. Like, that's what they do with all these mobile games. Pretty much every mobile game does that. And
Well, I haven't gotten any of those. When you combine it with good gameplay and, you know, fun dialogue and stuff, it becomes less of a chore and more of just like, well, let me put it this way. Like in other Harvest Moon games, when you're watering the crops every day, I mean, that action is not inherently, like, thrilling, but you have that, it's kind of this very Japanese concept of slowly gaining rewards for your effort. And it's really what the original Dragon Quest and other JRPGs kind of build themselves off on, that reward for effort and patience. And I don't know, I think there's something to be said for that kind of gameplay whenever it's done right.
I agree to some regard. I really liked the original Harvest Moon games because they did have that slow reward for effort, but it was done in a very elegant way. Like, yeah, you plant the crops and you water them, but the reward for planting the crops and watering them is that they grow. You know, and I think in the first Harvest Moon, there was still like an upgrading mechanic, but it was more tertiary to the experience. It wasn't really part of what you thought about. Like, you pretty much just had your watering can and you watered for a while, and then eventually you get to upgrade it.
Yeah.
And I like that because it's really focused on the immersion in this farming game. I don't think any game like that had been done before, where like the focus of the game is on such a banal sort of experience.
Yeah.
What I wonder is, do you think it would have been more immersive if every time you watered a plant, a little meter popped up and went, like, oh, I just got some more skill points for watering every time I water. I think that would have taken away from the experience.
Well, once it gets too like gamey like that, I guess. But I don't think the series or Rune Factory had really gotten to that point where everything was always popping up and doing crazy things, but I guess there were a few like skills that you could increase your proficiency with, like the sword and with the watering can and with the hoe and with the, what's another tool, like the milker, maybe not the milker.
Brush?
Actually the brush and the milker were just kind of their own thing. But yeah, so stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, I kind of understand. There's like a way where it gets too much like a game, too much like that mobile thing you're talking about. So, yeah, I guess I can kind of see it.
Yeah, they call it gamification, where like everything is points based. Like,
you get credit for everything, right?
Yeah. Like every step you take, every time you use the bathroom, every time you wash your hands, like everything's a point or something. And
you're motivated not for the action itself, but just like to get these points. It's kind of like the achievement system on the Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah, which I've always had kind of not an issue with, really, but it's always seemed like a very empty experience. Because for an achievement in a game, before they had these achievement systems, you know, an achievement would be, hey, do you think you can do this in the game? Like, as a challenge, or like, you're being creative with what you do. Like, an achievement is beating this game in under 2 hours, or, as an example.
For Metroid.
An example game. An achievement is not, oh, you just killed 5 enemies, or you just, you know, entered this room that you haven't entered before.
The passive kind of things that just kind of pop up. Yeah, that's a little weird. So, bringing that back full circle on topic then, do you think Nintendo should have an achievement system? Swallow their pride and do something that a Western company, I don't want to say came up with, because technically Kirby Air Ride invented achievements. Thanks. But Microsoft did popularize them, and you know, Sony jumped on board shortly after that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think that they're popular. There's no reason not to do them. They're easy to make. I find them a little bit I don't know about annoying, but they don't add anything to the experience for me. So
I tell you what I want to see. What? I want to see take that system and refine it to where each game can only have, like, I don't know, a few of them. So they're actual feats, and then tie them into the Play Nintendo account, the My Nintendo accounts, where you're already getting like coins for, you know, logging into Miitomo or whatever, and you can use those coins for discounts and stuff. Tie that into that so you get rewarded for playing well, so you can like get discounts on games and stuff.
I think that's a cool idea, but there's room for exploitation. Like, if you could actually turn those achievements into financial benefits, then you would have people who say, hey, I'll pay you $10 if you do this for me, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, how are you going to do that? Well, I mean, I guess you could have your friend come over.
Yeah, or you could... No, they'd have websites where you can give them your login information, and then you run into security issues, and people get their identity stolen or something because they want to... like pay somebody online to log into their account to do it for them. You know, I think I wouldn't go as far as offering any financial incentives, but definitely more interesting achievements I would be in favor of. But I don't know how you can really stop developers from putting in banal ones. Like, for Nintendo's own games, they probably could do more interesting ones, but you know,
I hear, speaking of Zelda news and things that would be an achievement, they've confirmed that you can actually go from the beginning of the game straight to the final boss if you were good enough, which I like. I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't he say it could be done in 15 minutes?
Maybe. I think that number may have been floating
around. Something like that, yeah.
Which makes me wonder, like, I feel like there's going to be some sort of, like, dungeon stuff that you have to collect, but you don't really have to collect it if you can... I don't know, apparently do some sort of superhuman feat to get all the way to the final boss and kill it. Because I think the speed runs for this game are going to be crazy.
As long as it's really, really difficult.
Heck, I might attempt it. That might be the first thing I attempt. Like, I'm going to go beat this game! Start running, there's like all these guardians firing lasers and stuff, I'm sure. It's going to be a mess. It'll be great.
Did they just make the enemies in that area really, really difficult? Are there all these guardians who zap you with lasers that you can almost never dodge unless you have a later item or something?
What I'm thinking is it's going to be something where if you want a real shot at it, you're going to need to go gather a few things, like specific things from actually knowing the world and the game and playing through it at least once or twice or a few more times. Knowing exactly what you need, going out and getting it, boosting your stamina temporarily, boosting your health temporarily, and just going for broke. And then when you get shot, you know, eating your food, and eventually making your way into the castle or whatever and fighting the boss because you came prepared. That's kind of what I'm thinking it's going to be. Something where you can boost your chances if you have enough knowledge about the game itself, you know, not just skills, you know, navigating Link around, but also knowing where to go to get a few of these items you're going to need to give you the best shot at beating the game. And I think that's cool. It's not like a puzzle in itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope the game keeps track of, like, your fastest time or whatever. Because if there's one thing that Zelda games really aren't very often, it's replayable. The only Zelda game I've replayed a whole lot is the very first one, because there's so many ways to tackle it. So that's one of the things I'm most excited about with Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, me too. The embrace of exploration and different ways to play the game from... I mean, it appears that they've embraced different ways to play the game and... a lot of exploration elements in this game, so that's what excites me the most by far.
All right, so what else is coming out on launch? Bomberman, you know, Super Bomberman R, I've been having my eye on for a while. Konami's confirmed that it's going to be $49.99. I think that feels a little high to me. That feels a little bit too high. I mean, I like Bomberman a lot. It's not that I'm trying to, like, undersell Bomberman, but this particular Bomberman game, it looks like mostly a budget title. Like, They put in the battle mode, they put in kind of a shortish story mode. It looks a little funky, like it doesn't run at 60 frames per second, and normally I don't hugely care about those things, but the rest of the visuals, you know, don't really look all that great. And there hasn't really been any major, like, cool things shown for it beyond it just being, like, the core Bomberman experience. So I feel like $40 would have been a nice spot for me to go ahead and take the plunge if the reviews are good. As it is now, 50 is kind of a tough pill to swallow. When it might be, you know, I don't know if it's going to be like a good Bomberman game or like something that's kind of glitchy, like it made too fast or whatever. But I do know that they have bots, and I love bots because one day I'm just going to talk about how much I love bots in games and how every game needs bots. That day's not today, but Bomberman does have bots, which I have to commend it for. Chris, you ever played Bomberman?
Oh yeah, I've played lots of Bomberman. I played a lot of the N64 one.
Okay, yeah, yeah, Bomberman 64, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or Bomberman Heroes as well.
Yeah, that was on the... Was that the one on the GameCube?
That was no, like I thought that was the N64.
Oh, wait, no, you're right, you're right. That's the one after Bomberman 64.
Yeah, I liked the multiplayer in that game.
Yeah, it's a very clever multiplayer. It's a good concept. It's done really well. It'd really be a perfect companion game to a big adventure game like Zelda.
Yeah.
I just wish it was a little more budgety.
And there was also a Bomberman, I believe, on the TurboGrafx.
Yeah, there was one on pretty much every system. There was one on the TurboGrafx. The Saturn one is really popular. I haven't played most of these, but their existence on like the Wii U Virtual Console, that kind of devalues the newer one as well a little bit to me. Like, I figure I can just go buy one for less than $10 and still get the same core game experience. I just really want, you know, it'd be nice to be able to play with those little colorful Joy-Cons, you know, put it out on a plane, you know, and have people play and stuff. So yeah, Bomberman is one of the other games people are looking at. And of course, the month after that, in April, we get Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for the Switch. You know, I never really got into Mario Kart 8. I'm not really sure why, but I have to say, like, it does look appealing having a game that looks this nice on that little screen. Everything I hear about this game just sounds really impressive running on that handheld, you know? And it's kind of tempting to see, like, you know, someone playing that just whatever out and about and being able to say, hey, you want to play Mario Kart with me? And you got those two controllers right there. I don't know if this happens in real life or just in Nintendo ads, but it's kind of a neat idea to me. You know, everyone knows Mario Kart. And you got the two controllers right there. You can flip it on its side. So, I don't know. I'm kind of leaning towards not getting it just because Mario Kart 8 never really clicked with me. But, I don't know. Maybe it's time for a second chance. Oh. What do you think, Chris? You never owned Mario Kart 8, and you may be getting a Switch at launch. So, do you have any opinion on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe? It adds battle mode. It adds the Inkling. I don't think it has any new actual tracks. I think they've confirmed that there's no new tracks. It's full price, but it's got, you know, it's got, like, online and whatnot.
I feel like I got my fill of Mario Kart with Mario Kart Wii. I played that game a ton, and I really enjoyed it. But unless 8 is really substantially different, I don't know. I feel like maybe I'd rent it through Gamefly or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Okay. I think ARMS comes out around that time, too, and I pretty much hear nothing but good things about ARMS.
Yeah, I'm very interested in ARMS. I think, in general, I'm interested in new game experiences. Yeah. And sometimes with a series like Mario or Mario Kart, you know, they kind of repackage an old experience as something new, mm-hmm. which is fine for people who haven't really played it as much as an older person like me has. Same goes actually with Fire Emblem. Like, I really enjoyed Awakening, but I didn't get Fates because I'm like, I mean, it looks like the same gameplay, so it makes it less interesting for me to get. Which is the same reason that I was interested in Advance Wars DS2 more than I would have been if it had just been like a rehash of DS1.
Oh, because with DS1 you pretty much you're
it's
set.
Like the ultimate, yeah, you're set. Yeah, why would you have another one? So I liked that they changed that up, even though it kind of missed the mark.
Yeah. Well, for ARMS, the only real issue I have with it right now is you ever seen those images that are like my mom named Smash Brothers characters? Just by looking at them. I feel like they did that with ARMS characters. Because they're all stuff like... Alright, so here are the five characters. You got Spring Man, Ribbon Girl, you got the ninja, and his name is Ninjara. You got Master Mummy. He's a mummy. He's Master Mummy, right? And the last one is the girl in the mech, and her name is Mechanica. So it's like... Someone brought the designs to their mom and said, hey, mom, what do you think these guys' names should be? Springman, Mechanica, Ninjara. You know, and that's like, okay, let's go with that. They all feel like placeholder names. They're kind of janky names. And I like the character. I like the character designs themselves. They're fun. They're colorful. But I mean, like Springman, for instance, there's already a Mega Man boss called Springman, and he's got like the same thing. He's got the springy arms. So it's like, it's a weird,
that is weird.
Weird choice. Especially after Splatoon came along, like, because people are comparing this to Splatoon a lot. Splatoon has very clever names for all their characters. You know, you got the lobster is, I mean, the shrimp with the tempura jacket, his name's Krusty Sean, you know, like crustacean. You got Annie and Moe, you know, the anemone and the clownfish in it. I don't know. So I was kind of hoping they would stretch their legs a bit more than Mechanica. But yeah, so that looks good. So I mean, that's pretty much our near. Oh yeah, speaking of Splatoon, you know, Splatoon 2, I think it kind of rounds out the early launch window with summer release, and then I believe the Fire Emblem Warriors game has been announced for fall. So it kind of filled out a little bit of a gap there in the lineup. So pretty excited for Switch. Pretty excited. So I guess those are our games for now. Chris, real quick, do you have any plans for launch day? What is your launch day looking like at this point?
Well, I've been looking at ordering it off of Amazon or something, but they haven't had it listed for sale, I don't think.
Yeah, it's been sold out in a lot of places. It's
yeah, I don't know where I can find one, unfortunately. I definitely want Zelda and a Switch.
I'll tell you what I heard.
What's that?
I heard that Toys R Us is not doing pre-orders, at least in the U.S., so that might be your best bet, actually.
Okay.
Usually a place like Walmart doesn't do pre-orders. They're doing pre-orders this time. But Toys R Us, I heard, isn't. So if you get there, like, a couple hours early, you know, on launch day before the fever, you know, hits at some point, mm-hmm. like it did with the NES Classic and the Wii, you'd probably be in good shape.
Now, that's something I actually wanted to talk with you about.
Yeah.
With a lot of Nintendo's products, particularly the NES Classic, the Wii, and...
like, a lot of the Amiibos, and they've limited editions of a lot of games, like the Fire Emblem Fates one.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, this limited availability, do you think it's a business strategy, or do you think it's just they didn't properly estimate the demand for these items?
I think initially it was a business strategy. With the Wii, it felt a little artificial. I think they knew what they had going in was going to be big. With the NES Classic, I think it was honestly a mistake, because they had so few of those that they had to have been losing money on that. I think they underestimated how many people would want an NES Classic. And with the Amiibos, yeah, I think it was part of the strategy with the Amiibos. Because it kind of worked, you know. You're putting out a lot of products out there, but you're kind of portioning them all out in a little bit at a time. It's kind of like almost like the Disney strategy with their movies.
Yeah.
And I think they deliberately did it for those. I think it'd be risky to do that with the Switch. I know they want people talking about it, but they don't want another NES Classic situation where, like, nobody has one, you know, because obviously that's not good. And of course, there's a lot of risk that comes with, you know, manufacturing all this stuff. You don't want extra stock. But yeah, by and large, I think it's usually a business decision that they've been doing.
Do you think that's a good thing or not? Like, do you think that that is harmful to the customer, or do you think that it's an acceptable method of driving up hype and sales?
As a Nintendo fan that likes physical media, I've been kind of annoyed by it a little bit. Like, I've tried to get some of this stuff, and it's just really hard to get, like, the Fire Emblem Fates complete collection. You end up just kind of helping out scalpers and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't love it. I think in some cases it kind of helps their bottom line. Not really an analyst myself, but that's pretty much what I feel. I think it can help a little bit if they do it the right amount, but it's a little bit annoying. That's why I went out and pre-ordered the Switch and the Zelda Special Edition, like, the day after the next morning, really, after they did the thing in the evening, the presentation.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that they won't do it this time with the Switch. I think they have more to lose this time with the Switch. Any benefit that they would receive from some sort of frenzy to get Switches, I think, is outweighed by the risk of people not really being that interested. Because there's stiff competition for the Switch. The PS4 is doing really well right now. They have to do a lot to sell this new bold idea for a console. Mm-hmm. And if they're intentionally making it hard for people to get them, I think not only is that kind of shady, but I think that they're definitely going to be harming their...
Someone might go home with a different system, in other words.
Yeah.
No, I can see that. Yeah, so they gotta be careful with it. I did hear they're actually stepping up production with the Switch after better than expected pre-orders.
Oh, good.
This was a tweet actually from I think yesterday. This guy says Nintendo chief Kimishima said the firm plans to increase production of Switch pre-order status. So far, so good. Yeah. So sounds like because of the pre-orders, they're making more of the systems.
I'm glad to hear that.
You might be able to get one after all, Chris.
I hope so.
I will keep my eyes open. Would you prefer the color or the gray one?
Probably the color. I think they look pretty cool.
Yep. Did you know the color, they actually, like, when they sell the separate Joy-Cons, they're the reverse colors? So if you buy the color system and the you know, the extra set of Joy-Cons, you can have an all blue or all red machine.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, kind of neat. Or you mix, you know, however you like.
All right. Well, that is all we know about the Switch that we've learned in the last couple weeks. And, I'm pretty excited for it. I think there's been a lot of naysayers. The popular reception to the Switch's announcement has been kind of negative. I don't know about overall, but there's been more negativity than I expected because I feel like I'm often the cynic. But, you know, on the Switch, I've been quite positive. I'm excited to play it. I think it's got a lot of potential.
I think overall it's been positive. There's definitely been some criticism specifically about, I think, like the accessories price. Prices,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and you know, if you take Zelda out of the launch lineup, it's a much weaker launch lineup. But it's hard to get upset about that when like Zelda looks really good, even if it is on the Wii U, you know. So yeah, we're excited, and we hope you guys are successful in finding one as well. So make sure you know, when they become available, if you want one, you better get one.
Yeah, I'm not usually a big fan of pre-orders because that lets game companies get a lot more revenue out of hype.
Yeah.
So I'm usually a fan of the wait and see approach for most games, but I mean, Zelda and the Switch, especially because of the scarcity involved, pre-ordering is kind of the way to go. And if Zelda's not good, then I don't know what to tell you, because that's like, it seems like the safest game to pre-order.
I won't know what to believe in at this point.
Zelda's not good. Yeah, that would throw a lot of things into question.
I'd be questioning, yeah.
Questioning a lot of things.
Questioning just about everything that I know to be true in this world.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Well, thanks for joining us. As usual, stick around, you know, subscribe to our channel and whatever. We'll be doing a Wii U retrospective very soon. The sad Wii U, we hardly knew ye. But I have a lot of good things to say about the system and its games, so we'll be doing that on our next podcast. And then starting in March, I guess we'll have a big old Switch blowout podcast. So exciting times ahead.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you there. So thanks for listening.
All right, bye-bye.